Mr. Charles Slepian, president of FRAC, is with us. Good morning, Chick.
Good morning, Roy. How are you?
I'm great. I'm stumbling over my words a little bit this morning, but other than that, I'm doing just fine. I thought it might be interesting to start with the latest situation we have where the small aircraft flew into the building and what effect that's going to have on future security in and around New York City.
Well, Roy, we have had rules in place for a long time regarding flying over the island of Manhattan, essentially what this issue is all about. And it's never been prohibited, really, but you have to check in with the tower and get permission from air traffic control if you wanted to fly over Manhattan Island. Unfortunately, too many pilots did not comply with that regulation. The FAA has, in a sense, now said you will do that. To fly over Manhattan Island, particularly a small aircraft, will have to get special permission to do so. You can still fly up and down the East River and the Hudson River without notifying the tower of your intent to do so, and you can fly it under 1,100 feet. I think what happened the other day was a small aircraft flying under 1,100 feet, going up the East River, had reached a point where it was required to check in with air traffic control because you were approaching LaGuardia Airport. The pilot decided to make a left turn, didn't have enough room to do that, to come around and go back down the river again and hit the building.
And, of course, I don't think the weather was too good that day either. I think it was overcast as well.
It was overcast, but I don't think visibility was as much of a problem as the inexperience of the pilot and a sudden decision to make that turn probably played more into what happened than anything else.
Well, now, I would think that they would change the rules flying over the East River, wouldn't you think, at this point?
Well, because it is such an important tourist attraction, most of the air traffic going up and down the East River is made up of helicopters and small tour planes, and they don't want to interfere with that, and for safety reasons, it probably isn't required, the current regulations, to go up and down the river.
Right, and of course they could make certain exceptions, like the helicopters with the new helicopter service to Kennedy, and those sorts of commercial carriers, I would think, could certainly have an exemption to that. But in any event, I guess there was a lot of fear, a lot of flashbacks on 9/11 when this came about.
Well, surely there was. You know, when you have an airplane colliding with a building in Manhattan, of course, everybody's thoughts immediately go back to 9/11, and I was no exception to that. Before you finally find out exactly what occurred, you always become concerned about terrorism these days, and was it intentional, and you realize that if it were a terrorist act, it could have been a terrorist act, and the aircraft was carrying explosives, we might have had a very, very serious tragedy occur.
That's for sure. Speaking about explosives, when I flew out of Newark recently and they had one of these new explosive devices that you walk through, it was kind of like walking through a hair blower. All these, you know, they had all these jets of air that blow onto you as you walk through the security procedure there. That's the first time I've come across that. Now, I would guess Kennedy and some of the other airports are probably catching up to that technology, wouldn't you think?
Well, Roy, it was probably a refreshing experience if it was in the heat of summer, but I have to inform you that those machines called puffer machines are being withdrawn from all airports because they just haven't lived up to expectations, and it's back to the drawing board with that equipment.
So here they've got this expensive piece of equipment and it really isn't doing the job that everybody anticipated that it would.
That seems to be the case. There's some discussion as to whether or not it's in the software or it's just the overall technology doesn't seem to accomplish what they hoped it would. It requires blowing particles of explosives off of your clothing and off of your person and having it sampled in the air around you. It's a complex kind of an approach to explosive detection. In this case, this particular piece of machinery is not met the standard.
What seems to be happening in general in the security areas? I noticed that the U.S. passports, everybody is supposed to have a passport to go out of the country. I think it's January 07 was, they keep moving the date up, and now the cruise lines have come out with something I think they call a some kind of a cruise pass, whereby you can get that and not have a passport. But of course we've always recommended that everybody get a passport. Were you aware that the cruise lines are attempting to do this?
No, I was not, but it's probably a good idea that you have at least some kind of identification mandated by the cruise lines. I would prefer that we had some uniform approach, such as the new passport, which has biometrics on it and holograms on it and much more difficult to duplicate.
Right.
But, it's a step in the right direction. Fortunately, we live in a world where it's becoming important that we have some kind of identity with us at all times.
Now, you deal with these issues on a day-to-day basis. What do you see forthcoming here in the near future, if anything?
Well, I think that, first of all, we are definitely toward the direction of an identity card requirement in the United States, which will carry some kind of biometrics, either an iris scanning capability, or a fingerprint capability, or even a facial feature capability, which is different from just an ordinary photograph. But we are definitely headed toward the direction of being able to positively identify people when they travel, and even people who may be stopped on the street for a variety of suspicious activities. We're headed that way. It's unfortunate that we have to go in that direction, but I believe it's necessary, and I think it's coming.
Now, in your organization, which you call FRAC, what's going on within that in terms of what kind of input you're getting and basically what sort of recommendations you're making?
Well, FRAC, as you know, stands for Foreseeable Risk Analysis Center, and what we do is look at the likelihood of criminal acts, including terrorism, and even chaos and disorder coming from disasters, and helping organizations and individuals to plan for that eventuality. For many years, we focused simply on what we now consider ordinary crime as opposed to terrorism. But we have branched out, so to speak, and we are working pretty intensely now, or intensively, I should say, with corporate America. We are doing audits of security for some major financial institutions. Even in the food processing industry, we are now playing a role to see to it that we are not exposed to bioterrorism and so on. And so anything and everything having to do with the foreseeable risk of danger, of harm, is an area that the Foreseeable Risk Analysis Center is getting into, including training, not only of security personnel, but personnel in general, in the workplace, in the community, and in our schools across America.
Now, the food thing is kind of scary. I mean, because we're so exposed there, that's a difficult thing to monitor.
It really is, but it is something that we can get a better handle on. Our approach primarily, and by the way, right now I'm talking to you from one of my clients in the food industry. One of the things we try to do is control access to facilities, to be sure that we know who's there, what they're bringing in with them, monitoring the performance of security technologies as well as individuals, so we get a better handle with regard to who we're dealing with. Next is we're trying to put in place the kinds of equipment and training protocols that would enable anybody in the food field to be able to periodically test their products to make sure that they are not sprayed or not infected with some kind of a virus, biological weapon or chemical weapon.
Well, because in the recent scare, apparently they've determined that it was caused by cow manure in a nearby field. So, in essence, I don't know how long it would take for that to actually get through the soil and into the other fields, but you wouldn't have to actually be on the field that you wanted to expose to this, would you?
That's true, and what that means then is that there's going to be a requirement that we test the product itself on a regular basis, and there are ways now of scanning food, of scanning the produce, to test for the presence of harmful bacteria and viruses and so on. You're right about what happened with the, I guess it was the spinach industry, where it, the infectious material came up through the soil itself. But we have the capacity to begin to control that better than we have been. And it's going to be a long process, and we're not there yet. But at least we're making some steps in that direction.
Well, Chick, that's great. I know you're a little under the weather, so we're going to let you go here. I am myself. I'm kind of winging it here today as well. Anyway, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and we'll hopefully have you back again real soon.
Well, I look forward to it. We old guys got to take care of ourselves, Roy. Roy, I was just here trying to figure out how many years I'm 30 now.
Is
we're both about 42.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's about it, 32. I think that's my next birthday. Anyway, once again, Chick, thanks, and bye for now.
Yeah, bye-bye.